All right. Well, I'm in the deep in the dungeon of Witches of Malibu with one of its members, Scott. He just played two beautiful tracks for us. So tell us, I guess question in everybody's mind is the significance of the name, which is a Malibu.
The name, originally the project was just going to be, it was kind of a joke. I'd read some review for some band, I can't recall now who it was, but in the quietest. And this review went on and on about how this band was so secretive and heavy, and this reviewer just couldn't get over just how just slaying this fucking tape was that these guys made, right? So I'm pretty stoked. I listened to it, so I listened to the clip playing, and it's far from heaviest thing I've ever heard. I guess it's in black metal kind of thing, so it's meant to be kind of sounding shitty. But I couldn't believe it. I said, I could come up with a better project than that. Super secret. And I started to tell friends, you know, I'm going to come up with this secret project with no releases. We're so secretive.
It's unfindable.
Unfindable. And it's going to be the Witches of Malibu. And
right.
A couple of people I told said, if you don't use that name, I'm going to. So it turned, you know, at that same time, I started to get my hands on some relatively cheap synthesizers and super crude recordings. And Knox Mitchell from Michigan offered to put a tape out.
Because it's a super evocative title, you know.
Yeah,
it's kind of a jokey thing.
I mean, I pictured everything immediately. Like, pictured the hats, you know, the floating hats.
Right.
And it is all, you know, it was just there.
It just fell in.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that goes along a lot with your pieces. They're long, fairly long form stretches of, you know, building blocks, you know, beats and pads and, you know, waves and harshness and, you know.
Yeah, I didn't, I like that. I like to build pieces and, you know.
Do you find that you spend a lot of time on each individual piece and then kind of bring them together or figure how you want to bring them together? Or
It works both ways. Sometimes it's just a matter of I'll just decide to plug some boxes in and immediately something will pop up and it's ready to go right now. I'll record it, like, immediately.
Right.
Like, warts and all. Other times I'll use the Pro Tools and just, you know, build something, you know, massage it, edit it, and spend some time on it. But a lot of this Witches stuff is pretty spur of the moment and direct to CD.
Nice. Well, I feel like, because it has a pretty considerable live component. I mean, you've played it this live number of times, I feel like. I guess I've been blessed to
sure.
see it enough. I mean,
yeah.
I
would have been perfectly happy never playing live, just doing releases and keeping the whole secrecy part, you know, down. Because the first couple of releases I did, I didn't tell anybody it was me.
Mm.
I mean, my name's not on any of the releases. And I did a split with, or the collab with Eric Wood from Bastard Noise. But David Schaefer asked me to do a show a few years ago. And you know, I wanted to do it, like, behind a curtain and all this whole shit. You know, it's like, he's like, no, don't be silly. Just, you know, people should know it's you.
Right.
From your Hunting Lodge days, and they should know. And so he talked me into, like, really kind of scrapping the whole secrecy.
The mystery.
Yeah, the mystery stuff, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're still a mysterious person.
Oh,
so you have that.
Thank
you have
you
that
very
going
much,
for
sir.
You. So touching back to the Hunting Lodge days, can you tell our listener more about that? I mean, it's a crew from Michigan?
It was myself, and Lon C. Deal. And originally it was the two of us with someone named Carl Nordstrom. It was three of us. Played a couple of shows live, and Carl moved to San Francisco. Lon and I continued putting releases out on our own under SM Operations and, with tapes and LPs and stuff. So, Michigan, Port Huron, Michigan.
Great.
Kind of in the boonies, up in the woods. We were pretty rural.
And did that sort of inform your guys' aesthetic for what you were going for, or did you know what you were going for?
We didn't really. We had a lot of stuff fall in our lap. Let's just say, Carl's brother. Well, there was a band before us in Port Huron called Problem, and they were very influenced by TG and Cabaret Voltaire and a lot of experimental music, and that core. They split up and then they started another project called Hate Gray, which Lon was in for 5 minutes. Then they blew that up and they sold all their gear to Lon and I.
Oh, wow.
So all of a sudden now I've got, fancy synthesizers. My project before that was called Screw Machine, and it was very crude, just sticking a microphone in a box fan and, TV static, really, noise by any means necessary, kind of stuff. And then now all of a sudden I've got fancy synthesizers and the first time Lon and I got together and started to work on something, it just clicked. And, Carl had his gear and, And then Thomas Nordstrom, Carl's brother, was an amazing artist. He was in both of those bands, too. In fact, all the gear that I got, I bought from him.
Oh, wow.
So he did, he did all the original art. The album cover was his. Will album cover was his. This stuff. Mm. Very X-ray-ish looking, like skulls and bones layered on top of each other.
Medical.
Very crazy collage stuff. And so that was kind of, that aesthetic just kind of fell in our lap, and it was, mysterious and...
Right.
people were like, who are these guys from Port Huron, Michigan, doing releases on German labels?
Right. But there's got to be something to that, starting out recording with, a cassette deck and a microphone into a fan, and then taking that aesthetic to, a fancy synthesizer. That's interesting, I think. And when we were just talking about pedals and synthesizers, and, where do you fall in that spectrum of artists that are, some people are computer people. Some people are pedal knob turners and guitarists or whatever.
Right? Like, I'm into whatever works for you. And you're making cool, interesting sounds. Then that's great. I love it. That's your process of smashing a bunch of guitar pedals together and just going crazy. Fucking right on. I've heard some artists, some laptop artists that really blew me away, and I've heard some that was, they need to try harder. And they don't really do any favors for computer artists,
Right.
It's just, they're the ones that give the computer artists the bad name, the laptop noise people. But if you got that shit dialed in and it sounds good, then more power to you. Really, I like synthesizers. I haven't had much success just plugging pedals into one another, and there's a randomness that I can't deal with when it comes to that. I like to be able to have more control.
Because I feel like almost you could turn everything off and reset a little bit, and then get back to where you were for some of your stuff.
Sort of
in the same zone, but there's also, it seems like, an element of randomness to. there's a lot of this stuff, which is great. I mean, that's like you said, the...
Yeah, I mean, you can... You know, if you've got a synth with a lot of knobs, I try to, like, get it dialed into where I only really have to move one knob.
Mm. And so leave it.
So I don't get lost, or, you know... it's called get lost in the weeds, and sometimes you can't find your way back.
Right, right. Every step you make takes it further and further
exactly
away.
And a lot of these synths, like I said, it's you're dealing with, you know, knobs that are like right on the hair of you're getting that sound. It's right there, and just one micro move,
right
or left,
like even a tap,
it's gone, and it won't come back. Even if you know. Take notes. It doesn't matter.
Gotcha. So there's no use taping anything or putting a mark on a...
Yeah. I tried that. It's just like, it's better to just kind of keep things, dumbed down to like one knob.
Cool. So what do you have in the future in store?
This year is, there's some shows out of town. There's going to be... There's talk of a Oklahoma Noise Fest.
Whoa.
And then there's a, it's confirmed, a show in Columbus, Ohio in June. So those two things are happening for sure, I think. Well, the Oklahoma thing I'm not too sure about. They say it's happening, but we'll see. But the Ohio thing is confirmed, so... Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing. I played Michigan last summer.
Oh, wow.
With Paul Steinborn from the band Hate Gray. He was originally in Problem, old friend of mine. We actually did releases for Hate Gray.
Oh, wow.
With SM Operations. So he played for the first time in over 30-some years.
That's crazy.
Got him out of the garage, got him out of the garage, and did a great set with him. And that's about it for this year. I mean, possibly a release. I've got an album done that's been done for a couple of years that needs to get out. And that originally it was supposed to be an LP. It fell through. So I'm talking to some people about possibly getting that out.
Great. Yeah, that's... I remember the talk of a cassette box set.
Mm. Yeah, well, that could still happen too. I've got quite a few cassette, boxes around that I could probably fill up. I do a lot of one-off stuff, one of four,
right,
kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're recording it all live in the room,
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, I actually did start that a while ago. I did one project. I had a four cassette box that I did four. I think there were 60 minute cassettes of just pure random improvising. Just let the tape run.
That's great.
And it's still sitting there on the shelf. I haven't done anything with it. So. That was a beast to handle, I don't have anything for sure set as far as releases go.
And any local shows?
No, that I can think of.
Well, get on it, bookers of Los Angeles, and
not that I want to, but
oh, okay. There's a flip side to that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm cool with it, so, yeah.
That's good. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Cool. Yeah, man. Whew. Shaking hands.
Shaking hands.